Well, good morning, everyone. So we're continuing now in our series on Proverbs, and as we've noted over the first several weeks of it, the book of Proverbs has this sort of interesting splits. You know, it's several books put together, and so we worked through the first book, thinking about wisdom in general, and then last week Mark started us in on the second book, which is the Proverbs proper. And so today we're going to talk about an actual proverb, right? And so the proverb we're going to talk about today is Proverbs chapter 22. Verse 13. So we'll begin by reading it. The sluggard said, "A lion's outside in the square. I shall be murdered." Now that's the proverb, right? That's the whole proverb. And you hear that and you think, oh, that's kind of cute and it's kind of neat. And we immediately run into our problem with the book of Proverbs, right? You can sort of see why the book of Proverbs always presents this trouble. It's like, you read that and then, well, and what? You move on, right? And so you can imagine the experience, and you probably all had it, right? If you ever sit down and say, oh, I need to read the Bible, and so I should read different books. So I'm going to read the book of Proverbs. It's got lots of wisdom. So you imagine reading the book of Proverbs, and you imagine reading like this part of this chapter, right? And you'd get this, right? Here's our experience of reading Proverbs. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the man who lends. Who sows wrongdoing will reap injustice, and the rod of his wrath will fail. The generous one, he shall be blessed, for he gave of his bread to the wretched. Banish the scoffer, and strife will depart. Dispute and demeaning will cease. Who loves heart's purity speaks graciously. The king is his friend. The Lord's eyes watch over knowledge, and he confounds the traitor's words. The sluggard says, "A lion's outside in the square, I shall be murdered. A deep pit is the mouth of the stranger woman. The curse of the Lord will fall into it." I mean, you just sort of imagine, just sort of you're reading that, and it's just like, What was that whole page just about, right? And you realize that, well, it was about nothing, right? It was just a bunch of little random sentences. And as we're reading these, right, and we just sort of gloss over them one after another of another, and every now and then one might strike us, and we think, oh, that one was kind of neat, and then we move on to the next one. The book of Proverbs is a very dull book just to read through. I mean, it's just, it doesn't have a flow to it. There's no pattern. There's no, like, climaxes and falls. There's no tragedies in the middle. I mean, it's just sort of a bunch of pithy little sayings, because, well, they're proverbs. And the problem we run into is we don't really know how to read these proverbs, right? Nietzsche talks about this in The Genealogy of Morals, right? One of his books. Nietzsche has this to say about this book that he's just written. It says, people find difficulty with the aphoristic form. So aphorisms are like proverbs, right? So people find difficulty with proverbs. This arises from the fact that today this form is not taken seriously enough. An aphorism, a proverb, properly stamped and molded, has not been deciphered when it has simply been read. Rather, then one has to begin its exegesis, for which is required an art of exegesis. I've offered in the third essay of the present book an example of what I regard as exegesis in such a case. An aphorism is prefixed to this essay. The essay itself is a commentary on it. To be sure, one thing is necessary above all if one is to practice reading as an art in this way. Something that's been unlearned most thoroughly nowadays. Something for which one almost has to be a cow, and not in any sense a modern man. Rumination. And he's exactly right there. That sort of, we run into these proverbs, and if you want to really get at a proverb, you don't just read the proverb and then move on. If you really want to understand a proverb, you have to ruminate on it. It's like chewing the cud, right? You gotta have it there, and you gotta think about it, and then maybe reread it, and think about it some more, and then think about it a little bit more. And so you take the proverb we've got today, this morning, right? So Proverbs 22:13 again, and we read it again. The sluggard says, "A lion's outside in the square. I shall be murdered." And then we pause, like, okay, well, what is that proverb saying, right? Like, what is this proverb doing, right? I mean, it's kind of funny, but like, what is it trying to get at here when it does that? And the first thing we note, right, the sluggard is saying, "A lion's outside in the square, I shall be murdered." And that's what's really interesting about the first really interesting thing about the proverb is the verb is actually murdered. A lot of translations try to water it down a bit and like, "I shall be killed," or "I shall be slain," or something like that. But the actual verb is murdered. And you can see why translators are always trying to water it down, because if you're saying there's a lion outside in the square, it's legitimate to think, well, I'm going to be killed by the lion, or I'm going to be slain by the lion. But the proverb is actually, "I will be murdered." Lions don't murder people. And so right away, we're getting this disconnect in this proverb, right? The sluggard is saying, there's a lion outside in the square. And that sounds scary. And then I shall be murdered. And you can just sort of see the ramping up of this effect. Like, it's not just that there's a lion out there. The lions actually have to murder me. You know, you can imagine it's like some sort of an assassination lion seeking him out or something, right? I mean, sort of, what is this guy doing here in ramping up this idea of this lion's in the square and I shall be murdered? And then you're like, well, then who's saying this? And if you just heard that statement, there's a lion out there, I shall be murdered, you instantly would think of somebody who's just sort of scared, right? A fearful person or something like that, right? You might think of a coward or something, but that's not who's saying it. It's a sluggard saying it, somebody who's full of sloth, or just this person that's just, you know, like a sluggard, and they're saying there's a lion on the square. So why in the world is a sluggard sitting around talking about how there's lions in the square and they shall be murdered? And we know when we start thinking about it, oh, what's going on here is you've got a sluggard, that's how the person is introduced. They're thinking, I need to go out into the square, but I don't want to go out in the square because there's a lion out there and I shall be murdered, right? And so what is the slugger doing? Well, the slugger, well, they're being a slugger, clearly trying to avoid work. I don't want to go to work. I don't want to work today. And so what am I going to do? Well, there's a lion out there and I shall be murdered. And we're supposed to laugh at the sluggard because there's no lion out there, right? And the slugger's just sitting there just as a way of getting out of work. So this raises an interesting question as we think about this proverb. Why should the sluggard work, right? Like the sluggard doesn't want to go to work. Why doesn't the sluggard just stay home and not work, right? What's wrong with that? Why do we think that this is a problem? And the answer to that, and you know, sort of you thinking about it, and it turns out to be a little bit of a tricky problem for us in this way, right? The first thing we think of when we think, why should the sluggard work? Is because what happens if you don't work? And we know what happens if you don't work. You starve to death, right? And starving to death is bad, right? And there are lots of proverbs like that. In fact, if you look back in the book of Proverbs, the Proverbs proper start in chapter 10. And in chapter 10, we get in verse 5. So this is one of the earliest in the Proverbs, right? A clever son stores up in the summer, a disgraceful son slumbers at harvest time. And so you get a proverb there about like your good son is out there working in the summer. Your disgraceful son is even sleeping when it's time to bring in the crops, which you think is the one time the disgraceful son might go out there and bring in the crops. And then just a few verses later, verse 15, the rich man's wealth is his fortress city. The disaster of the poor, their privation, right? So if you're just sort of this here and you can be rich, then you have like your fortress city. If you don't have anything, you're gonna starve to death. And so the problem with sluggards is they're not working. Working is really important because if you don't work, you're gonna starve to death. And so it's really obvious you should be working, right? And that's sort of the point. And the sluggard here is not working. And then we run into this really fascinating problem. This is why it's a problem for us. How many hours a day do you need to work? Think back when this proverb was being written. Like, what is it that you're doing in these days, right? If you want to survive, what do you have to do? Well, you get up at dawn, and you go out in your fields, and you work until dusk, and you are working. I mean, you are like working nonstop all day long. And then the next morning comes along, and what do? You get up at dawn and you go out till dusk and you work. And imagine you decided in the middle of all of this, I'm just gonna take a few days off. What happens? Well, if you have animals, they starve to death and they die, right? And so you've lost out. If you have crops and you don't weed or you don't harvest them, and then you don't have food, and suddenly you find you don't have your winter stores and you literally die. And if that's the world you live in, which is a world where you are working from dawn to dusk, right? Every single day, year round. And then you imagine somebody who's a sluggard. What happens to sluggards in this world? Well, they don't have food. And if they don't have food, or they don't have housing, or they don't have a roof over their heads, and then they actually will die, it would be very unwise to become a sluggard in that world, right? I mean, it'd be horribly unwise. It'd be a very foolish thing to do to not realize you may not like work, but you really need to be working or you will starve to death. And now you think about living in 21st century America. Nobody listening to this has starved to death. None of you have starved to death. And in fact, none of you were sitting here this morning thinking, man, I really need to be out with the animals and the crops right now, or I'm going to starve to death this winter. And I dare say none of you are worried about this afternoon. In fact, most of you could take tomorrow off and still survive the winter that is to come. Most of you could take 2 or 3 days off and survive the winter that is to come. In fact, you think about our work week. We reduce the work week over the 20th century. It's actually a miracle when you think about it. You imagine reducing the work week to the standard 40-hour work week. And if you have a professional job, you maybe you're working 60, maybe even working 80 hours a week. But you are not working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. None of us need to do that anymore. We have weekends. We have vacations. We have all of this time on our hands that we literally don't have to go to work just in order to survive. So is this idea that we need to be working from dawn to dusk even relevant for us today? And you realize, no, of course you don't have to be working from dawn to dusk like they would have in the old days. In fact, if you think about it, if I told you, you could live a life here where you have no job, you don't have a job, and you have no responsibilities, but you still are going to be able to survive. You'll wake up every morning and you can literally do whatever you want all day and then you can go to bed. Do you hear that and think, whoa, what a horrible, sinful life to lead? And you don't hear it that way. You think, wow, that'd be great if I could have a life where I don't have to go to work all day. I can do whatever I want all day and I'll still have enough to survive on. In fact, that life is so great, we call it retirement. Think about what retirement is. Retirement is a long period in your life where you are relieved of the obligation of work, and you don't have to do all that. So if you retire, are you just full of sloth and a sinner and a terrible, horrible person? Or is this like our goal now? In fact, when we think about this, right, sloth is one of the seven deadly sins, right? I mean, it's right there in this list of the seven deadly sins. There's sloth right there. And if I were to stand up here and say, well, let's think about the other six: pride, envy, wrath, avarice, gluttony, lust, right? You can easily imagine hearing like, okay, yeah, these are bad things. It's hard to spin it like these are good things. You should revel in a life of envy, right? You want to get to the point where you can just envy all day. But we all have this idea that, oh, no, if I could give a life of sloth, that'd actually be a good thing. In fact, if somebody were to say to you, I'm retiring now, I'm no longer going to work, you don't say, you terrible, horrible sinner, you. You say, that's fantastic that you can now live this life without having to work. We don't think of sloth as a sin anymore. We think of it as something to aspire to. It's like a great thing. It's like a goal of ours to have this. And that's odd. What's it doing in the seven deadly sins then, if it's not really a sin? And obviously the problem is we must be thinking about sloth all wrong. And it turns out, as you think about sloth, and so what do they mean when they're putting in these seven deadly sins? What are they talking about? Well, it turns out sloth is not the same thing as rest, right? So we think this idea that, like, well, if I want to be slothful, I mean, think about slothfulness, we think about a person who's just resting. But rest is not a problem. Rest actually is a good thing. And we have the stamp of Christ himself saying that. Christ says to you, if you are weary and heavy laden, come to me and I will give you rest. Rest is good, right? It's a good thing. It is something we should aspire to. It's exactly what the promise of God is. And so we often will confuse sloth and rest by thinking, well, slothful people are people who are just resting. And that's not it at all. Sloth is not the same as rest. Sloth is also not the same thing as just sitting around not doing anything, right? And that's what Paul was saying in the passage Carol read earlier, right? He's talking about these people in Thessalonica that are idle, and what are they doing? They're busybodies. They're actually out there all day, every day doing stuff, right? And what are they doing? Well, they're out there helping out people, right? You know, they show up at your house to just sort of encourage you and help you out and give you some advice on how to do it. And then they go on to the neighbor and they tell them how to, you know, and they're just sort of, they're very active. They're very busy. Sloth isn't just sort of sitting at home doing nothing. Sloth is at rest. So what is it? Like, what is this thing that this proverb, when it starts talking about the sluggard, and we're supposed to be thinking sluggard, sloth, bad, what is this thing if it's not rest? And so in order to get at that, well, we have to actually go back and sort of read stuff from before now, because like I said, we completely confused the term. So there's this really marvelous little essay by this guy, Joseph Pieper, who's a 20th century philosopher. The book is Leisure, is the title of the book, The Basis of Culture. And in it is, he writes this. And I'll be honest, I mean, this is sort of jarring to read because it seems so counter to the way we think about sloth or idleness. Idleness, in the old sense of the word, so far from being synonymous with leisure, is more nearly the inner prerequisite which renders leisure impossible. If you're idle, you can't have leisure. That's the old sense of the word. It might be described as the utter absence of leisure, or the very opposite of leisure. Leisure is only possible when a man is at one with himself, when he acquiesces in his own being, whereas the essence of acedia, or sloth, is the refusal to acquiesce in one's own being. And what does that mean? I'll back up a little bit. He writes this. The contrary of acedia, the contrary of sloth, is not the spirit of work in the sense of the work of every day of earning one's own living. And that's how we tend to think of it. We tend to think you have a job and you work, and sloth is the opposite of that. But that is not the traditional use of the word sloth at all. They're not, those two things aren't opposites. The contrary of sloth is man's happy and cheerful affirmation of his own being, his acquiescence in the world and in God, which is to say, love. And that seems weird to us. And this idea that the sort of, you know, the opposite of sloth is love is also, it's a jarring thing that happens in Dante's journey, right? So Dante gets to purgatory and there's a circle for sloth where he's working on sloth. And in the circle of sloth, everybody's just running around in the circle really fast. And so you read that and you think, oh yeah, so that's the opposite of sloth, is running really fast. But as they're running past, they explain why they're running. And it's because in life, they showed an insufficient amount of love. Not an insufficient amount of going to work, an insufficient amount of love. Sloth is not working at your job, right? So what is it? And the problem isn't that we think about sloth all wrong. The problem is actually that we think about work all wrong. What is work? And it turns out there are two ways we can think about work. The first way we can think about work is that thing you do in order to provide for yourself. Right? Work is the thing you do to earn an income so that you can survive, so that you can go on vacation, so you can buy stuff, so you can do all this stuff. That's what work is. It's a means of existence, right? We work to exist, right? That's what work is. And that's one way we can think about work. And if we think about work that way, that's what work is. When we talk about work, we just mean this thing we do to provide for ourselves. We've completely missed the theology of work, this idea of what is work really. The other way to think about work is this. What work is you are here for a reason. You have been put on this earth for some reason. The omniscient God looks down and he looks at you and he says, you have a purpose in this life. Now, what is your purpose in this life? Well, you all have different purposes in this life because we're all different people. We've been created by God differently. We've been put in different situations. But we all have this vocation, is the old word. We all have this calling. We all have this thing that God wants us to do. And that's why he's created us the way we are. And that's why we're in the situation we're in, is because we have this thing that God calls us to do. And if you think about work as this vocation, this calling, well, part of your vocation and your calling may well be the thing you do to earn an income. But it may be way more than that, too. In fact, it is way more than that. Your vocation, your calling isn't just, how do I earn an income? If you've got a family, it's, how do I care for my family? If you've got friends, it's, how do I care for my friends? You think about your calling in life, this thing you're meant to do. Well, one way to sort of capture or summarize your calling, which would fit all of us, is your calling is to love. It's to love God, and so do what God wants you to do. Your calling is to love your neighbor as yourself, to be thinking about others and sort of do that. And that's what you are called to do. You are here to do all of these things that you are called to do. And so what sloth is when you are not doing the thing you are called to do. Sloth is when you're looking out and you're saying, here's what God would have me do, and I just would rather not do it. What's the example of sloth? Well, Dante again, right? When he's in the circle in purgatory and he meets him, and the people in the circle of sloth give the biblical example of sloth. So where is the best example of a slothful people in the entire Bible? It's the passage Amy read earlier. That's exactly the one they give. Here are the Israelites. They're getting to the promised land. It's a land full of milk and honey. It's a land with giant grapes. It's just amazing. They're going to be able to go in. They're going to be able to relax. God has promised it to them. And what do they say? I can't be bothered. I just can't be bothered to go do this thing, to go into this land, even though it's going to be great, even though it's going to be the most relaxing and enjoyable and restful experience of your life. You can't
be bothered. And so what do? They spend 40 more years wandering around the wilderness. And let's be honest, that's not like easy life. It's not like they're avoiding difficulty to lead an easy life. It's actually a harder life. But they just can't be bothered to do that thing that they were supposed to be doing. And that is the example of sloth. We're called to do all of these things. And you know what? It's just too much of a bother. And it turns out when you think about sloth and work this way, you realize you can be slothful at work. If you're at your job and they're paying you, right? And you're there and you've got a task you're supposed to do and here's this thing you're supposed to do and you think, you cut a corner here or there, or you just don't get around to it, or you sort of ignore this thing and hope somebody else will pick it up. You're at work, you're getting paid, but that's exactly what sloth is. Is this not treating your paid job seriously? It's not saying somebody's paying me and I'm going to take this job seriously and I'm going to give it my best. You can also show sloth when playing. You can be out and you can be having this right and you're just sort of there and you're just sort of, I'm not going to quite play and I'm not really going to engage with the people I am. There's that old poem, work while you work, play while you play. And that's exactly what that poem is getting at. If you're at work, work diligently. Take it seriously. Don't be slothful while you're working. Work while you work. But then if you're at play, then play. Don't be doing it half-heartedly and thinking about work or whatever. I mean, actually play. If you're resting, rest. If it's time to go to sleep, right? I mean, you know, imagine living a life like this, and what you're imagining is a life of purpose, a life where you're saying, what should I be doing now? And then you go do that thing. And you are always doing what you should be doing. And at every moment, this is what Peter was getting at every moment, you're saying, here's who I am, here's what I should be doing, and I'm doing it. And sloth is the opposite of that. Sloth is the opposite of doing what I should be doing. Sloth is when I'm saying, I'm going to go do something else just because. And right now, what everybody wants, what I want, what you all want, is we now want the list. Like, what are the activities I can do that will show that I'm not being slothful? Like, what should I be doing, right? And you know, the list is easy to provide. Watching football is clearly a good activity. Watching golf is clearly sloth, right? I mean, no doubt about it, right? I mean, and we can start making these lists of this is good, this is bad. And you realize pretty quickly that my list of what is good and what is sloth is going to look like my tastes, right? Like, the things I like to do, they're clearly good. The things you might like to do that I hate, clearly sloth, because there is no list. Because it turns out the same activity, the same literal activity, could be sloth or it could be what you're meant to be doing. There's nothing about the activities that are inherently slothful. Rest is not inherently slothful. Sleeping at night is not slothful. It's actually a really good thing to sleep at night. If you're not sleeping 8 hours a night, you are not taking rest seriously enough, right? So sleep is a good thing. Rest is a good thing. Relaxation is a good thing. Enjoying life is a good thing. Working is a good thing. You think about our lives, what you have to think is, what should I be doing here? And the activities are fascinating. You think about emptying the dishwasher. Emptying the dishwasher is a good thing to do. But if you want to lead a life with no sloth, does that mean jumping up and making sure the dishes are done and emptied the second the dishwasher is done? Is it okay to let it sit? And you realize, well, it depends. Why are you letting it sit? Maybe you actually have other things to do. Maybe your calling right now isn't emptying the dishwasher right now. Maybe there are other things you should be doing, in which case, go do those other things. But maybe you're doing those other things because you want to avoid the job that's just sitting there right in front of you. Now, which is it? Well, you know who knows that. You know that. And I know you're all thinking, you know that about your spouse, right? I can see this, right? But sort of, you know what you should be doing. And then you know when you're sitting around saying, I'm going to go do something else. I'll give you the best example I have. Preparing a sermon. Now, preparing a sermon is a good thing. Let's be honest, right? Everybody wants a sermon that somebody thought about in advance. But more than once in my life, on a Saturday, on a nice day, when my wife has a whole bunch of yard work she'd really like done, more than once in my life, I've had to go prepare my sermon. And it's really unfortunate that I've had to prepare it in the middle of the day rather than at night, or, you know, heaven forbid, the day before or something like that. And you know what's really weird about it? I know I'm using preparing as a sermon as an excuse to not show love for my wife by going out and working in the yard when that's what I should really be doing. There's plenty of time to prepare sermons, right? Why does it always have to happen right when there's yard work to be done? That's sloth. That is exactly this. And you'll think, what am I doing when I'm avoiding the yard work? I'm actually doing something very useful and productive. Preparing a sermon is a good thing. I mean, it's hard to spin it as that's a bad thing. But there are times when I should be doing that. And there are times when I should be doing other things. And when I should be doing the other things, and I find the excuse not to do them, to go do something else that's really, really good. But I know exactly what's going on, and it's wrong. And so we have this sort of image of sloth. And you look back at our proverb. The proverb is really fascinating again when we flip back and look at it now. The sluggard said, "A lion's outside in the square. I shall be murdered." And you think about what the sluggard is really saying there. The sluggard is not saying, "I have other things I need to do." I mean, you can go out in the square, but the sluggard isn't saying, I'm not going out square because I have other things I'm supposed to be doing. The sluggard knows the sluggard is supposed to be going out in the square. That's the only way this proverb makes any sense, is that the thing this person should be doing is going out into the square. And then instead of going out into the square, what does the sluggard do? Makes up the stupidest excuse in the history of excuses, right? And again, that's the only way the proverb makes any sense. If there really was a lion in the square, well, then it's actually quite rational not to go out into the square and be killed by a lion. But we know that that's not the problem. We know there's no lion. That's the "I shall be murdered," right? I mean, it's just silliness. So here is this person building the excuse, not because there was something else that needed to be done, but because the sluggard knew exactly what needed to be done and was making up an excuse not to do it. We all do that all the time. We are all constantly thinking, I should be doing this, and then trying to think of excuses why we shouldn't do the thing we know we're supposed to be doing right now. We all do it. And you know what this proverb is beautiful for? The next time you find yourself doing it, and you know you do it, you know when you're doing it, just go with this excuse. Instead of, oh, I need to prepare a sermon, or oh, I need to go out and socialize, or I need to just call my friend, or I need to think, oh, on Facebook and check to see how people are doing, or I need to even pray, right? Instead of just all these things that we think of that we should be doing instead, just go with, there's a lion outside, I shall be murdered. And it sounds silly to say that, but quite honestly, all of our excuses are every bit as silly as this one. Our choices do what we should be doing, or we're being slothful. And the proverb is reminding us, don't start making the excuses. Just do what needs to be done. Let's pray. God, we thank you. Thank you for the gift of just our lives. God, we thank you that we aren't just here just to survive and then die, God, but that you've given us a purpose in this life. That, God, every one of us has some reason to be here. Every one of us has a calling and a vocation. And God, we know all too often we do not live up to our calling and our vocation. That, God, all too often we sit around and make up the excuses of the lions in the square for the reasons we don't do what we know we should be doing. God, give us the strength to resist that temptation. Give us the strength, God, to resist sloth and do exactly what you would have us do, day by day, moment by moment. And God, give us the encouragement and constant reminder that what you would have us do, God, is enjoy your rest. That, God, you have not called us just to toil that is burdensome, but you've called us to live a life where we feel fully restful. God, you've called us to live a life where we can rest in the confidence of knowing that we are doing what you would have us do, and that all by itself brings us great relaxation. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. All right. From the book of Proverbs. Go to the ant, you sluggard. See its ways and get wisdom. For she has no foreman, no taskmaster, nor ruler. She readies her bread in summer, stores up her food at the harvest. How long, O sluggard, will you lie there? When will you rise from your sleep? A bit more sleep, a bit more slumber, a bit more lying with folded arms, and your privation will come like a wayfarer, your want like a shield-bearing man. May God be with you all this week. Please enjoy the day doing exactly what God has called you to do, which may very well be just enjoying this gorgeous weather. And God be with you all.